Blog Talk Radio.
Walk in the blood, yeah. I can see clear. The body dropped. Somebody just got shot. Oh Lord. Oh Lord. Tell me, can you hear?
Another block, cop, crooked cop, gunshot, another body drop. Grandma waiting at the bus stop, county jail letter in the mailbox. House shoes, sweat socks, Keisha braided heads on the porch to get that extra guap, eviction face at rock bottom. Pray she bounce back on top. American dream, a nightmare, please make it stop. Neighbors watching, hell, modern day dress, God slinging rocks, black boy, white tank top. Baggy jeans, dreadlocks, streaming of that drop top, non-stop, Chinese spot. And let me get a black and mild op, navigate, liquor store, project floors and vacant lots. We be the have-nots, when we have, we become what we got. Another car ride, boxing some knots, that new shit, pedestrians jot. Hip-hop, corner, stay a track in the fly, the paint immaculate watch. Single mother's hustle, to punch the time clock, crime or cash crop, somebody wanted the dime drops. Ice grills, mask a kind heart, as time stops, fathers are holograms. Sons waiting for the day to snuff Uncle Sam, why not? No sympathy for that man, he get what he deserved, damn. I said he get what he deserve, y'all, look. And he get what he deserve, y'all, they keep telling me. Body found in the attic, contents of a purse scattered. Leftover re-shattered, clothes tattered, lipstick smeared. Broken glass, no news reports on the matter. Nobody gathered, nothing changed, asked around about a name. Some said to me, cause some claimed Lorraine. The tag on the foot said Jane. I wonder who she was, did she give and receive love? Did she fight back or just gave up? She lay here, legs cold, hair gold. Framed in the child's pose, bruised nose. Seeming say pantyhose, Sade on the radio. Sour singer through the window. I wonder if pain has a tempo, her better slow. Street survive, never live, then we die. Drink the bird glass, ceiling higher. Born on the wrong side, is there a right side? Classified, I labor sober, nickel and dime. And who decides? I lied by sign and order down the line. They see they gentrified, push us outside the city lines. Sirens frame the evening, profile for being non-white. Breathing, walking the streets, board cops, they fiending. Probable reason, no donut shop, cause he's a roll up. On a couple cats, Spanish speaking. Mexicans, but they screaming Puerto Ricans. They thinking they all the same, fuck them. Blow out their brains, killing season. It's war hour, wish they could take us all out. Let the dogs out, niggas should be hanging from trees. Auction off now, load them up, blast until they all down. Fire shots in full force now, they never see the courthouse, y'all. They never see the courthouse, y'all. They never see the courthouse, They never see the courthouse, They never see it, hey. And something keeps telling me.
I
heard my brother say, another body dropped today on the block. Somebody just got shot today on the block. Look, y'all, watch today on the block. Today on the block. Another body dropped. Somebody just got shot today on the block. Look, y'all, watch today on the block. Another body drop. Somebody just got shot. Look, y'all, watch today. Another body drop. Somebody just got shot. Look, y'all, watch today on the block. Today on the block. Today on the block.
Good evening. I want to say thank you to our listeners who decided to have a moment with Misty this evening. As you know, Rhonda Bradley is joining me this evening as we discuss the correlation between white supremacy and organized religion, as well as address a series of questions that were presented to me regarding religion. And I wanted to invite Rhonda back so that we could tackle these questions and give them a weighted viewpoint on my, you know, from my stance and her stance, and see if there's any common ground, or less, or more importantly, are we on the opposite ends of regard to these questions as they relate to religion, as they relate to Christianity, more specifically than just religion as a whole. But before we go into the questions, I want to share something with you. This correlation between white supremacy and organized religion. When you take into consideration religion, and I want you to think of religion in a broader sense of the word, not just as it relates to Christianity, but I want you to open your mind into the different denominations within Christianity. I want you to take into consideration Islam. I want you to take into consideration Judaism, Catholicism, Hinduism, any religion, any organized religion that you can think of. I want you to look at organized religion as it relates to leadership with ultimate power, okay? Organized religion sets the stage where there is a leader who is supposed to be representative of, or the voice of, or the access to, or the portal allowing us mere mortals or you know, these heathens, you know, that we are without organized religion, access to God or to Allah or to, you know, whichever creator you want to identify with or use this analogy with. And as you take into consideration that this individual, this human being, that we place at the head of these religions, right? Now we've given them the title and we've placed them on a platform that elevates them above us, right? We are essentially acknowledging that they are closer to this higher power, whatever that higher power may be. And we place them on this pedestal. Now, there have been leaders that have been placed in these positions that, for all intents and purposes, have not abused their power, okay? When I think of that, I think of people like Muhammad Ali, or I think of people, and I think of, and I use Muhammad Ali as a movement and as a force in the civil rights movement who aligned himself with Malcolm X and the Nation of Islam, of Malcolm X. Now, I'm going to stop short of adding any other names, because when we give these people, these human beings, the accolades form and we identify them as the portal to God, right? We posture ourselves beneath them. And within this structure of religion, there is a clear definition of right and wrong. There is a clear definition of those who sin and those who do not sin, right? Supposedly. And so we establish this hierarchy. Now we have these preachers out here who get a taste of power, and because there are very limited checks and balances within these organized religions, when a minor offense occurs and they are not reprimanded, held accountable, and or removed, the message is sent that they are untouchable. Now follow this with me, all right? Because right now I want you to focus on organized religion. I want you to take into consideration that once you have assigned unlimited power and access to a human being, 9 times out of 10, they are going to abuse that power. And when the message is sent that they are not held accountable for that power, then they are going to repeatedly abuse that power. Misty, what are you talking about? Let's look at Eddie Long for a moment. Let's look at the Creflo Dollars. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. We have pastors right now that are having sex with minors. Not the first time, not the second time. But we have this situation where people are put in positions where their power goes unchecked. Now, when their power goes unchecked, this isolated group becomes subjected to whatever abuses this person is getting away with. Let me give you an example. In New York, there was this black cult called Yahweh Ben Yahweh, and he was given unlimited power. Whatever he said went. And the more power he got, the more abusive he got. And the more abusive he got, the more his desire for control and power went unchecked. And now you have small children, boys and girls, being raped. And when all of that came out, and you can Google it, when all of that came out, it was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. You see it in the Catholic Church. When power goes unchecked, those most vulnerable get abused. The reason I'm using the correlation between white supremacy and organized religion is because white supremacy was constructed deliberately, and it was constructed by white forefathers. I use that very loosely. At the benefit of their white families and their white society. When those men sat around that table making laws, creating banks and policies and things like that, they were making those laws with their families in mind, with people who look like them in mind. And when you think about it, who was around that table when those decisions were being made? White men. Now, white supremacy in America has benefited white people. We know that for a fact, right? But because white supremacy and white privilege goes unchecked, bleeds out into not only communities of color, but then it comes right back around and it negatively impacts white communities. What are you talking about, Misty? Unchecked power, when it is designed to oppress others, eventually comes back and impacts your community. Religion, I'm going to give you an example, a more relevant example. A little boy, this just happened for Ash Wednesday, who lives in Utah, which is predominantly Mormon, right? He's Catholic, got to school, teacher wiped off his, he had a cross, and a cross made in the symbol of an ash made in the symbol of a cross on his forehead, and she wiped it off. Letting him know, sending a message to this 9-year-old boy that you don't have the right to your religious freedoms and beliefs, right? White supremacy outside of communities of color and is now impacting white people. There are so many people, black and white, outraged at the sentence Manafort, I think that's how you say his last name, was just given. And he was given that sentence because of his white privilege. There are white rapists that get off, white child molesters that get off, white police officers who terrorize white people that get off. And this has historically been a black problem. But now, because that system has gone unchecked, it is now bleeding out into white society, and people are saying, what the hell is going on? Within churches, when you give a pastor and you set that pastor on that platform, you are subjecting yourself to a human who is infallible, who is going to make errors and mistakes, intentionally or unintentionally, and you're giving your money and you're giving your devotion, and after a while you give away your ability to think for yourself. And that's what's happened in the United States. In the United States, white supremacy has been tolerated and white privilege has been tolerated for so long that when it spills over into other whiteness, now it becomes a problem. Take the opioid crisis. And every time, man, I struggle with that. It is now a crisis because white people are dying because of opiate addiction. Anybody that lived through the 80s knows that there was no crack crisis. It was a crack epidemic that needed to be managed by stiffer drug laws. When you look at white supremacy and you line it up with organized religion and you understand that Christianity and Islam has been used to control and dominate African Americans and African people for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, you understand that that platform creates a system of guilt. See, when you attach my salvation to my obedience to your unlimited power, then that is a recipe for disaster when you talk about oppression. When you line that up with white supremacy and what has happened in the United States, I was in a very long discussion with my husband last night because he was expressing his frustration with how the black community can so readily jump on these bandwagons to crucify black people when they've committed a crime. And he was more specifically talking about the R. Kellys and the Bill Cosbys and the Michael Jackson, you know, all of this that's in the news. And he wasn't justifying any actions before anybody jumps up and says, oh, my God, just stop, that's not this. But what he was saying was, I'm looking on social media and I'm looking at all of these memes, and black people are tearing down black people readily. Why is that? Why is it that the black community is the only community that will jump on the bandwagon of white supremacy to tear down people in our community? Hey, if R. Kelly did it, then allow him to go through the justice system and be held accountable. We are not saying that we condone the behavior. We're asking for the same understanding that you give the Manaforts and the Henry or Harvey Weinsteins. See, the problem isn't that we aren't upset at what R. Kelly did. The problem is white supremacy shows pedophilia or sexual assault and they align it with blackness, when in reality, white men in power are doing this daily and they get away with it. See, therein lies the problem, right there. That unchecked system that has been going on for years, when police brutality happens, and people are like, oh, my God, what is America becoming? No, no, no. Police brutality is as American as lynching and apple pie. Demonizing black men is as American as apple pie. And the reason why we so readily jump on board and tear down our own people when they're down is because we have been systematically conditioned to do so. And that platform was set when the first Africans laid foot on American soil in shackles. And their religion and identity was beat out of them, and they were taught to be submissive to their masters. And they were, whiteness was rightness. And that you should pray that Jesus can make you white and clean, can wash you white and clean. Which is something that you will never obtain in this lifetime. So you will never be good enough. White supremacy and Christianity and Islam and every other form of religion that teaches you that you cannot access your Creator, that you are less than, sets you up to be oppressed. Listen, there's a quote from the movie The Color Purple. When Celie is out, I can't remember if she was in cornfields or what she was doing. I want to say it was the scene where she was in cornfields, and Oprah Winfrey walked through and walked up to her, and she said, "You told Harpo to beat me." And they exchanged some words, and Celie looks at her and says, "This life don't last always." No, I think it said, "This life won't last always. Heaven is forever." And Oprah Winfrey looked at her as Sophia in her character, and she said, "You better bust Mr. upside his head and think about heaven later." See, we've been so conditioned to be oppressed and to sing swing low, sweet chariot until our Savior gets here that we miss the fact that the very religion that you are following tells you at the beginning of the book that you were created in his image. Never once does it say that you should, and I'm talking about in the New Testament, because according to most Christians, and yes, I'm flip-flopping back and forth, according to most Christians, Jesus came, and the Word says Jesus came to fulfill the Old Testament. So that means that everybody's on a level playing field, but you missed that message. See, I can't sit in a pew and listen to somebody spew something that's contradictory to the Bible because I've read the Bible and I know it backwards and forwards. So the minute that you say something that doesn't align, because see, I know that you're not my portal to the Creator. You're just a man that's up there preaching. It could be me, it could be you, it could be anybody. But the minute that you say something contradictory, well, then I got a problem with that, partner. And I look around the room, and I look at the churches, and the people, it's like they are sheeple. They don't think for themselves. And Shahala was saying, "Misty, look at these people. They celebrate when black people are broken down." And I say, "Shahala, this is a product of oppression. This is a product of white supremacy." What you see right now, is the same thing you saw in 12 years a slave. When you have this man who was born a free man, and after he was brought into slavery, a condition he had never experienced in his life, there's a point in that movie that just breaks my soul, and it's when his soul gets broken. It's when he's standing there, and they all standing around, and they singing these hymnals, and he is crying out to this white God, like, "Do you hear us? Do you see this pain that we're going through? Why must we suffer on earth?" But it's like he was starting to drink the Kool-Aid. His free thought which was associated with him being a free man, was breaking right in front of our eyes. When we see black people celebrate the demise of other black people, I see broken people. I see brainwashed people. I see people that are plugged in the matrix. I see people that don't even realize that they have embraced a white supremacist agenda. Now, yeah, we can look at the overt ones like Candace Owens, and she, I believe that she just either hates herself or she suffers from mental illness. But I think that more than mental illness, I think that she hates being black. And she could, if she could have God grant her one wish, it would be to make her a white woman, particularly a white woman with blonde hair and blue eyes, far away from what she is than she is. We have given, no, I take that back. White people have given white people unchecked power. And we have sustained the brunt of that unchecked power since we came over here in chains. And if you'll pay attention, I say from the time we came over in chains, because we were here before slavery. Our history starts before slavery. I'm talking about what our ancestors experienced in the United States as enslaved people. Forced fed a religion that was not their own, designed to soften their natural resistance to oppression. Did you hear what I said? I want to invite Rhonda into the discussion right now. Rhonda, did you push one? Are you there? Rhonda? I don't hear you. Let me just double check and see if she's on. Rhonda, can you hear me? I think we're having a little technical difficulties. Oh, there you are. There you are. Hey, sister, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm like, it says I'm connected. I can hear you just fine.
Okay. I'm like, I can't hear you. I can't hear you. I can't hear you. Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we go into the questions that our listener presented, I want you to chime in on the correlation I was making before between organized religion and white supremacy.
I think what comes to mind for me first is when you talk about organized religion, I think about organized for what? Organized for whom and for what purpose? And so, because when I read the Bible, the only religion that Jesus talked about, the Bible, that the Bible says that God sanctions, the only religion that he talked about, that he sanctioned, that he focused on was, and it talks about it in James, I think it's in the book of James, it says the only religion that I see is this, that you see to the homeless, the orphans, and the widows. So how we got from that to arrive to where we are right now is man's doing. If we're talking from a Christian or a biblical perspective, and I know that there are listeners who share a different perspective, I can only speak from my own belief system.
Mm-hmm.
But my knowledge, my growth, and my understanding has taken me to this place, to where I am right now. So when we talk about organized for what? For whom? And how does this relate back to, if we're talking about the Bible, and I know there's a whole theory and concept about the Bible's been translated so many times that it's no good. But it was always designed to be a compass, a moral compass, and to give guidance. And so designed for, organized for who? See, if I want to, and it goes back to what you're saying when you talk about white supremacy, it was designed to further oppress the people who were already oppressed and possessed. Possessed by whom? Possessed by the people who brought them over here and enslaved them. And so, and that possession was just not a physical possession of their bodies. Their aim and their goal was to possess their bodies, souls, and their minds. Uh-huh. And so we still carry with us from all of those generations mind as it relates to theology. And so we've adopted and adapted to the white supremacists or the organized, their form of organized religion, because it was the thing they utilized to oppress us, to say that this God that you can't see, he's watching you.
Mm-hmm.
It was a tactic of fear and intimidation.
Right.
And I'm not saying that I don't have a faith or belief system in God. But where
right.
it comes from, what my relationship looks like, is not based off of the principles that were handed down to me. And so, organized for what? And for whom? And how long are we going to allow ourselves to be in a state of mind or a state of being that is still enslaved? At what point do we decide, do we wake up and understand that our mindsets are still attached or still linked, even if it's through some small fibers, to this system that we came out of? And so that's the first thing that's in my mind when we start talking about white supremacy and its connection to religion. Because if you start talking about anything else that they do, I mean,
mm-hmm.
they might live what may look like upstanding lives until it comes to their thought process and their thinking about people of color. So,
you do a lot of work with children that have been exposed to trauma, okay?
Correct. Yes.
And so you understand, you have a deeper knowledge and credentials to back this understanding that trauma isn't or doesn't have a one-time, solitary, frozen in time impact on an individual who is exposed to it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So
that's correct.
If a person is exposed to trauma, all right, and that trauma then, and research shows that trauma changes or has the capacity to change DNA, has the capacity to change the wiring in the brain, the synapses in the brain, has the capacity to change how you view self and self in relation to the world. Is that correct? Then if African people that were brought enslaved to the United States that experienced all of this trauma under the guise of Christianity, because, see, a lot of people, they forget the Klan is a Christian group, right? The Klan is a Christian group. Under this guise of Christianity, all of this trauma has been rained down on our ancestors. And we carry it. Oh, looks like Rhonda got kicked out of the system and can't get back in. Let me see if I can get that situated. Okay, bear with me right now because I don't know really. I'm having a little bit of technical difficulty tonight. So
this idea that our people who were exposed to tremendous oppression and genocide, rape, torture, it's safe to assume that we're still impacted today, that our parents parented out of that mindset and children were raised out of that mindset, and now we're in 2019, and that is why it's so easy for us to degrade each other. Hold on, just a second.
No, sis, her call dropped, sis. I'm here.
Oh.
What did you need? Did you need anything?
Yeah, well, she's trying to get back in. Does it show her in the queue, brother?
No, I don't see a number in the queue.
She's 5536. Rhonda?
Mm-hmm. No, her call dropped. Her call actually dropped. So
is it not allowing her to get back into the queue?
Is she calling back in?
Let me see. I'm trying to get her. Let's see. Oh, it keeps saying there are no shows scheduled in the next 24 hours. Goodbye. It doesn't give her an option to get back in. You there, Brother Ozzy?
Yeah, I'm still here. I wonder why is it doing that.
Sister Tara was telling me that the countdown was showing in red when I got started. My time, so 8:30 y'all time.
Right.
Yep, she just tried again, and she said it's the same thing.
Let me check in the background. We might have to, I want to say if we could try to call her from.
I can text you her number.
Call. Yeah, that could work.
Okay. Hold on just a second. Let me see. And I'm sorry to my listeners. Just work with me for just a second here while we figure out what's going on. Hold on just a second, Brother Ozzy. Trying to get it together.
No doubt. I'm going to play a selection and we'll be back in a second.
Okay.
This is Frequency.
Of the seven deadly American sins, being black has become numbers 1 through 6. If this statement strikes you as radical, you haven't been paying attention. I bet you were surprised when the Martin verdict came in and guilt wasn't mentioned. And let's be clear, this was the Trayvon Martin case. George Zimmerman was never on trial. He murdered a child while we were more concerned with whether or not a boy had smoke in his lungs than the fact that he would never again use them. All over the nation, people claimed this wasn't an issue of race, that the outcome was legally on par, accusing the left-leaning liberal blackjack dealers of once again playing the race card. They asked, what would have happened if Zimmerman were black? Would things have been any different? Well, of course they'd be different. If Zimmerman were black, this would have ended with a prison sentence. You can ask Marissa Alexander about any specifics that I'm missing, because for shooting a ceiling, she was sentenced to more time in prison than Trayvon Martin spent on the face of this planet. We live in a world where a man can be set free after admitting to the slaying of an unarmed teen, and CBS News has the audacity to run a piece headlined by Zimmerman's brother stating that George would now spend the rest of his life looking over his shoulder because, and I quote, there are people who would want to take the law into their own hands. Funny how some things are so black and white while others just taste like the rainbow. Red like the blood that stained the sidewalk where he fell after being profiled for walking too slowly. Yellow for the son of Tracy and Sabrina that shone bright by day but by night had stopped glowing. Green for the grass stains on pants that hung so low they heightened sensitivities without knowing. Brown for the identity Zimmerman played up for the all white. Sorry, there was one Latino set that we now consider a diverse jury. White for the privilege Zimmerman wore when he was out doing his neighborhood patrolling. And black, Black is just another name for numbers 1 through 6 of America's 7 deadly sins. And the seventh was ever believing that we would find justice in the hands of a system that pioneered the oppression of the Native Americans, the enslavement of the African people, carried out forced deportations, even though we all know who's really illegal. They gave summer camps to the Japanese. Who needs internships when you have internment? Who needs lower unemployment? We have prisons that turn prophecy. We don't need to fear God when we have capitalism to worship, and we certainly don't need these assholes always getting away in our neighborhood, so watch it, watch it. I was watching a trial that was over long before it could begin, so when the verdict finally came in, all I could hear were the words of the late Dr. King, calling for us to not allow the deafening noise of injustice to drown out the sounds of freedom's ring. So tonight, in honor of his legacy, I ask you this one thing. Please join me in this final call to let freedom ring. Let freedom ring from the rushing rivers of melanin that have overflown into our streams of consciousness so that people now claim we live in a post-racial society. Let freedom ring. Let freedom ring from the graves of Emmett Till, Fred Hampton, Sean Bell, Amadou Diallo, Oscar Grant, Trayvon Martin, Jordan, Russell Davis, Mike Brown, Azelle Ford, and all the other brothers whose names we'll never know, because even in 2014, a black man being killed still isn't enough to make it onto the evening news. Let freedom ring. Let freedom ring. I said let freedom ring. Free at last. Free at last. Dear God Almighty, this is not the freedom for which we've asked.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry about that, guys.
No worries. It wasn't your fault. So, back to our conversation. This, we were talking about trauma. And we're talking about how trauma, you know, according to studies and according to intellectuals, we understand that trauma doesn't just go away. That trauma, once you've experienced it, it impacts how you see self in relation to the world and how you see the world in relation to yourself. Would you agree?
I agree.
So the trauma that our people, the African people, experienced at the hands of their white oppressors that then parented their children out of fear and parented their children out of a need to survive within a system that was designed to destroy them, who are hand-fed a religion that teaches them that they will never obtain salvation unless they die, because they can never be made white. They can never be made clean enough, white enough in this life. So all of that sets the foundation for us to function within this system of white supremacy, which goes unchecked. And so I'm asking you, from an intellectual standpoint and a religious standpoint, how can we reconcile our trauma while this religion continually tells black people to come from a place of forgiveness, to come from a place of inclusion, to come from a place of absolving white master of his sins so that we can step a toe into the eternal everlasting life? Help me understand that, Rhonda.
Okay, religion versus relationship. And the reason why I do that is I find that in true relationship with God, in communication, in getting to know this being that I cannot see through communication, through prayer, through meditation, through people. Because if the Bible says that we're made in his image and his likeness, there is something about him that is readily evident. Though we cannot see him, we see them. And so he described it as, tell me that you love me, whom you've never seen, when you don't love your brother, whom you see every day.
Mm-hmm.
He also tells us that forgiveness is not for our perpetrators, but forgiveness is for ourselves. So I think people confuse forgiveness with forgetness, and they are two different things. And the reason why I go to forgiveness versus forgetness is because we're talking from a trauma-informed perspective. So when we start to talk about trauma, when we start to talk about trauma under the framework or umbrella of slavery and oppression, then we can start to understand some things as it relates to forgiveness versus forgetfulness. So forgiveness allows a man to be free. Forgetfulness does not happen because you have traumatic markers that remain. You have your way of life because you do what you've seen and what you've lived until you learn to live in a different way. You parent the way you were parented. And so even though slaves were not supposed to be children to their masters, but they were their overseers, they became parental figures. And so then you get things like, why do black people whoop or spank their children? Well, all these years later, we're still disobedient the way the master taught us to respond to it. All these years later, we still respond to freedom the way the master taught us to respond to it. He told us to be afraid of freedom. And because of that, you have a people who still are passive when it comes to seeking opportunities for growth, who are passive when it comes to we've gotten better as it relates to seeking out education, but we were taught that we were not supposed to be educated. Still have, even though we went through the civil rights movement and we have an era of people from the start of historical black universities and colleges in the late 1800s, early 1900s, you have a generation of people who valued education. And if you look at how things are now, you may believe that we don't, that African American children, children of color, don't value education in the same way. And I would argue that those tenets of trauma still remain. As it relates to religion, you hack out your own decisions as it relates to your relationship with your higher being. I don't even like to talk about religion because I see religion as a religion as it exists, this organized form, is a man-made, from a man-made system. Now, I don't say that there aren't any benefits when you go to a local church. You might meet other people, you might establish relationships that may become natural supports for you, that may become a part of your village. You may learn and actually study some things about the Bible that help grow or strengthen your relationship. All churches aren't that. All leaders and pastors in churches aren't that. The media would want us to believe that. Just as it would want us to believe negatively about African Americans. It would want us to believe that any black man you see is ready to rob you. So when he gets in the elevator with you, clutch your purse. But this fear and this mentality, see, we didn't just experience trauma, they experienced trauma. Because you cannot be a human being and witness and implement and do the things that they did to other living beings and not have your own trauma experience. And that's not something that people generally talk about. They talk about trauma from the perspective of a victim. They don't talk about trauma from the perspective of perpetrators.
Right.
In that the master maybe did what he did. Master's son was watching. So he learned to do what his father did, but you can't tell me that there's no impact on a child to observe the kinds of traumatic experiences, abuses, wicked evilness, that occurred to slaves. There's no way. So the same way trauma has followed us, it has followed them. And so how it looks different, we might more passive, we might still walk in victim mentality, but for them, they walk in fear. So now we have this whole uprising of white supremacy again. So it was quiet a little bit for a little while. Now with Trump in office, it's boisterous and big again. When you sit in rooms, even with the most intelligent of people, and you have discussions about diversity, equity versus equality, the fear that the white man has and walks in is that he is no longer going to be superior.
Right.
And so at some point, and I know it takes a lot of growth to get there, just from a human perspective, because the body, the mind, the Bible tells us, made in the image of likeness of God. There are scriptures over and over again that talk about cast your cares or your burdens upon the Lord and allow him to care for you. Talks us to not walk in fear, but to be courageous. So these things that we have emotion as a checks and balance system within us to let us know when things are great, when things are not so great. When we are doing well and when there's opportunities wherein we need support. We have these things in place for us, but the body was not designed to carry the stressors, the fears, the traumas that we experience in this lifetime. We know that because they talk about stress. Reduce your stress and you might save your life because you won't have the weight of the impact of it on your heart or how your body functions. So higher stress, hypertension, increased risk of heart attack and stroke, right? Okay. So trauma has, it's still the same impact. And I can only speak from I'll speak now from a personal experience. About a little over a year and a half ago, my husband passed away. I was in the bed when he fell on our bathroom floor. The sound of him falling is like a bad song that plays in my head on repeat at times. I could be perfectly fine and have emotions that say, I'm okay. I can be laughing. I can be enjoying something, time with my kids or on the phone with a girlfriend or even exploring a new relationship. And all of a sudden, I'll hear that sound. That trauma, no matter how far I'm getting away from it, it's still there. Another example, in case someone says, well, that wasn't that long ago. When I was about 6 years old, I'm from parents where domestic violence was, so I'm a product of witnessing domestic violence and at times caught in the crossfire. So there had been a domestic violence incident. The response would always be that we went to paternal grandmother's home. So we're at paternal grandmother's home. The next thing that always happened is that dad showed up remorseful or with tears and apology. And so on one of these occasions, he's apologizing or has shown up to apologize, and mom is in the kitchen ironing clothes. I just remember, I don't remember hearing arguing or anything. I just remember coming around the corner from my grandmother's dining room to the kitchen and seeing my dad take the iron towards my mother's face. And because she blocked it, it landed on her forearm, and I watched the skin come off her forearm. I see it as plainly as a 45, almost 46-year-old as I did at 6 years old. Trauma remains. My body wasn't designed to keep that, so my brain developed ways of surviving the trauma. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And then because, you know, so we had this period of time where they talked about split personality disorders. But then as they began to the lives of people with this diagnosis, what they found was these were people who had multiple layers or multiple traumatic experiences. So their brain begins to disassociate to protect itself in order to survive living on a day-to-day. So in order to get past who I had to be in the middle of that rape, I become someone else. And then we went from calling it multiple personality disorder to dissociative identity disorder. And I'm not saying we got a lot of people that walk around with that diagnosis. That's for, you have to meet certain criteria. But what is very common is multiple layers of trauma for people with that diagnosis. And I'm saying we do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We may not experience trauma to the depth that requires our brain to go there to protect us, but it does what it can to protect us, just like it tries to warn us when our stress levels are too high. Oh, my pressure is up. I got a headache.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel so well. My stomach is nauseous. So this body is designed, no matter what skin you're in, functions the same. It was designed the same. So they can no more carry the burdens and stress of the world than we can. The problem that we suffer from is the evil of supremacy, that one man would want to lord over another. His trauma response now is fear. And that fear increases the more diverse the Western civilization becomes.
So when a person feels like they're losing power, and we can even use this correlation with domestic violence, when a person feels like they're losing power, their lethality and cruelty increases.
Yes, yes, yes. That's why for women who are having a plan or attempting to leave domestic violence relationships,
mm-hmm.
fatality, the risk of fatality increases for them.
Yes.
Because that reaction and response, again, I dare to say that perpetrator also has their own trauma-related response. And it may not be or look the same as that of the victim, but it comes out of the roots of the same place. And then we have to start talking about things like spiritual warfare, spiritual connections, soul ties. We have to begin to have a deeper conversation about where some of these things come from.
Well, I want to segue a little bit here because I want to go into some of these questions, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a caller, and this is really deep. Okay, so I'm going to read this to you. Why is it that the church seems to obsess over sins of a sexual nature, i.e. mm-hmm. adultery, fornication, abortion, infidelity, homosexuality, and etc., but seems to give less importance to other crimes or sins that the Bible speaks of, i.e. lying, deception, injustice, lacking in compassion, hypocrisy, greed, etc.? Person used church in parentheses, and what I understand the parentheses to mean is the body, the people therein, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what in your opinion, or why in your opinion, is it that the church or people in church are so hyper-focused on sins with a sexual undertone,
yeah.
that are directly related to sex? Sexual identity, sexual preference, blah, 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 but then minimize these
everything
other
else.
Things. Pretty much everything else. Hypocrisy.
That's pretty much everything else.
Yes,
right?
Yes, yes, yes.
So why do you think that is? I have an idea, but why do you think that is?
I can speak from a black church perspective, okay?
Talk to me.
Because I grew up in black church.
Mm-hmm.
Other than to condemn it.
Mm-hmm.
They spend so much time not talking about sex, they can't get their sex lives right, and so our divorce rates have increased. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Sex is taboo. But again, let's go back to trauma,
mm-hmm,
and slavery, and where did we get our mindset about sex? So we got our mindset and our thought processes, slave master,
mm-hmm,
not us, but then wouldn't even allow marriage between us so that we could reproduce of our own kind.
Mm-hmm.
And when we did, it was something that had to be pregnant. My child is now enslaved, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all of our thought processes around sex didn't come from the Bible. It came from the master.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't. When you go back and you start to research information and culture and sexual culture of,
mm-hmm,
our people before our people came here, this wasn't our problem.
Right.
Not to this degree. So, again, this is a trauma-related response that's come down from generation to generation for various reasons. And so sometimes when we have traumas, We react in ways where we don't really understand why we reacted that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's an example. When my husband first died, I, for a long time, I never was obsessive about the bathroom door being open or closed. I could care less.
Mm-hmm.
Then I found that every time I came out of the bathroom, I was closing the door after he died. To this day, even just now, the bathroom door is closed. It took me a while to realize the reason why I'm closing the door is because I can't stand to, if I have a flashback, see him laying on the floor.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes we are responding out of the framework of trauma and not knowing it. And so we just pass this down from pastoral generation to generation to generation, and we still preaching the same thing out of fear.
And out of trauma.
And out of trauma. So we condemn sexual sin in particular. Now, I'm a Christian in the church, participate with the local church, not as consistently as I have most of my life. Like, this is really surprising.
Mm-hmm.
And so I network through social media with other Christians.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised at how liberal we've gotten with sex despite what's talked about. Now, we still condemn homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
We're having a whole lot of premarital sex. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So at what point did it stop serving us to talk about the whole versus homosexuality?
Right.
At some point, we got real loose with it. And so we didn't really spend a lot of time anymore talking about adultery or fornication. We just, right now, we on homosexuality. And we've even gotten a great deal, like, if that is our argument, we have homosexual pastors now,
mm-hmm,
whole homosexual church communities,
mm-hmm,
where you can come here, God loves you and accepts you. And I believe God really does love and accept them.
Mm-hmm.
I am not homophobic or anti-homosexuality. Again, you got to work out your own stuff. I believe the church's response to it came out of a framework of trauma. And like other things, just like whoopings. We've been passing mm-hmm. them down from generation to generation.
And
and it's the one thing that's so taboo because it was relative to the recreation or the procreation of our people.
Well, and I also think, too, that this obsession with sexual immorality in the church has to do with a lot of the sexual violence that was perpetrated on not only women, but males as well. We overlooked the fact that there was a lot of raping of men and boys, on plantations. And so we can't overlook our forefathers that suffered. And so
no,
I think this carrying over of, the taboo of sex and talking about sex, when in actuality, if church is your foundation and you're spending more than 2 to 3 days a week in church, then you should be learning everything you need to know about life from church. You should learn about sex. You should learn about marriage. You should learn about sexual identity. You should learn about, hell, you should learn how to balance a checkbook and everything else, because if church is going to be the center of the community, then the church needs to step into that role and not just tell me who I can have sex with and who I can't, and whether or not I'm a burn in hell because of what I choose to do, you know what I'm saying, with my body and my partner.
Well, and then in that sense, I have to then play God in your life, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have to have a reason for you to keep coming back to me. And so that same premise, again, that mindset of fear, traumatic experience of slavery. See, what people don't understand is we're not that far from the times of slavery.
No, we're not.
And because we're not that far, the Bible has a scripture that talks about the sins of the fathers will be passed down up to 4 generations.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And if those things keep repeating generation after generation, how many 4 generations we got to go?
Right.
And then we talk about spiritual transference. So
mm-hmm.
the violence perpetrated through a sexual act from
mm-hmm.
one person to the other. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So where did these numbers of increased homosexuality come from amongst African Americans?
Mm.
Can we talk about that?
Hey, look at here.
Can we talk about the violation? So not just the trauma, not just, be honest, any change in physical or heightened stimulation in the time of the act, because the body responds regardless of the violation. So then there's this thought, first, is something wrong with me? If not, then what's wrong with me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then is there a beginning, even in my violation, some gratification as part of trauma from generation to generation to generation? And then we have these things that increase, and it spreads like the spider's web. And now we see much more than we used to see. And people will argue that, oh, homosexuality is not a spiritual thing. I was born this way. Bible says we're born in sin, shaping in our iniquity while we were yet in our mother's womb. So if all of these things, again, is biblical perspective that we're talking about, no one should be shocked or surprised about where we are.
Well, I'm
but
glad.
I think we do have to be concerned about where we're going.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I'm going to read the next couple sections of this question, which is a complex question that has layers. So I'm going to read it, okay?
Okay.
The question is, what was Jesus' true mission? Save the world completely or get us to the 20-yard line? Was not his mission redemption and revolution? So let's start there. Because then there's another piece to this that we need to look at. So what say you on that?
You don't laugh at me. I'm a huge Lecrae fan, okay?
Yes, you are.
Lecrae has a song called Rebel. And in the song, the lyrics say, Jesus was a rebel, a renegade outlaw, sanctified troublemaker, but he never sinned. No. He lived his life by a different set of rules. But they still persecuted and didn't approve of him. So I would argue, yes, Jesus was. He came to fulfill the law. He came to redeem a people. And he came to revolutionize the world. So I don't think he came to get us to the 20-yard line. I think he came to give us what we needed to get to the goal.
So he came to get us to...
Because he says, he tells the disciples from the get-go, as he's picking them,